And over the years, I've added and added and added with every new thing that happened. I've added a new clause, and now we've got an internet clause that protects you from anyone doing anything illegal on your IP address.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Oh, my God. Like downloading stuff.
Yeah. Right? I didn't even think about that.
Right?
Like, yes.
Literally. Illegal gaming or porn or whatever. Yeah. Or, you know, I mean, there's stories of people like having a prostitution ring or what? Human sex trafficking in their rental. Yeah. 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 Follow me. Under all is the land, the real, real, the real estate. Yes. Courtney, your friends about to show you how to generate wealth. Get educated. Do for yourself. Add a couple notches to your belt. Under all.
Under All is the Land, Season 4. I'm your host, Courtney Polis, here with my rock star co-stars, Silke Fernald.
Hello.
And Dominique Madden.
Hi.
Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm really loving our guests this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
having such
for sure.
a fun time. Today is no exception, but before we get into our topic for today, I just wanted to see what's going on in the real estate world with y'all.
It's moving. It's shaking. Moving.
Wow. Yeah. It's been crazy for
yep.
me. Like hot again. And I know I've heard rumors that May 3rd there may be a interest rate drop.
Ooh.
Have you heard that?
No, but I can't wait.
I guess there's another Fed meeting.
Well,
like better to do.
Like a quarter point or something.
Who knows? I'm just like, bring on the lower rates. But did you see that thing I posted on my personal Instagram regarding this like 17% interest rates in the 80s?
Yeah, oh that those were the days.
I mean,
17, that's crazy.
That's crazy. Yeah. So, you know, we talk about the prices being so low, but I'm sure that was a huge function of those extremely high interest rates.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right?
And, I mean, compared to the times, was the price really that low?
That too.
That's the next thing.
Yeah.
But 17%. I mean,
no, I'm talking about the actual purchase price.
No, I know. Yeah. But even if it was lower, I mean, 17% is, that's
right, I'm saying, like, what would have happened to those prices in 1982 if the interest rate was 2%? I'm just curious.
Well, that would have gone up.
Right, they would have gone up.
Yeah.
But I mean, sometimes when we look back at things, we're like, oh my God, the you know, the housing market is getting so expensive. And it's like, yes, properties appreciate over time. That's part of the value of wealth building and real estate. But also, like, it is a function of interest rates. Too. I mean, how much does the money cost to buy the house?
Mm-hmm.
So if the money costs more, then the cost of the housing is going to be less.
Mm-hmm.
It's big, but that little low, I know we say it every time, but I just check in because it's been a roller coaster. I've had listings that have been sitting, but like things are going into escrow this week. People are obviously over the hump. It's exciting and warm in LA again. And
well, taxes.
That part.
Yeah, that part.
That part. And taxes are done.
And
for the most part. And I think now people know what they have to spend and they're getting in back into it with more ease, knowing, okay, this is my budget, let's do this.
Right. That could be it too.
I think so.
Yeah.
I'm sticking to that.
Taxes have something to do with something for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, so anyway, it's exciting. It's a good time in the market, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But buyers, you know, still have to get realistic. Like, I had an offer this week where they submitted an initial offer that was very strong and countered $25,000 lower in the multiple.
What? Than where they started?
Yes.
What? So they changed their mind a little bit.
They changed their mind
sounds
a little bit, which I
like
thought
a shaky,
was really strange. Yeah. And so I responded back. I'm like, y'all meant to come in lower? How'd that conversation go?
And
he's like, yep.
Why?
They wanted to come in lower. And I'm like, okay. The crazy thing is they had a chance at their original offer.
Oh no!
Yeah.
Why did they come back
lower? When they came back lower, it put them equal with some other offers. I don't know. He didn't say. I didn't. To be honest, I was so busy getting it into escrow that I didn't like dig deeper.
Right.
But I will follow up and find
that
out.
That would also make me feel so nervous because that that's
they
a shaky buyer.
Exactly. They think they're overpaying.
Yeah.
What are they going to do with the inspections?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know that any seller would choose that.
No.
It's like the carrot dangling and then you take it away and now you want me to choose you?
It's a little bit of a slap in the face.
A little weird,
right? Yeah. You're like, oh, So what, you don't like it as much now? Like, are you gonna like it a little less next week? You
know? Exactly. $25,000 less, and then yeah, exactly. What do you do when there's a little problem in the inspection?
Right.
Are we doing $100,000 less?
Right. Right. Yeah.
That's when the crazy
drive around the block, see a neighbor that you don't like. Yeah, or a house that looks a little too dilapidated. You know, it's like what?
The other crazy thing is, I'm very transparent. I mean, to the extent that I can be. About encouraging buyers to come with their competitive offers, you know. So there are agents where you call them and they're like, I'm not telling you anything. I'm like, okay, no. I don't know if that's working for your seller or not. And I always presume they must have a horse in the race or something. Why wouldn't they tell me? Mm-hmm. But when I receive those calls and I can assist, like in this case, we had several offers that were over a particular threshold. I was like, we've got multiple offers that are over a particular threshold. So I would say to be competitive, you're going to need to know that and like be in that realm, like get where you're going. And even saying that, several of the counters came back lower than what I told them we already had.
Well, so that means they didn't believe you. They thought you were bluffing.
Oh. Is that what they thought? Why would I say
probably
that? Well, then they don't know me.
No, because maybe some people do that, you know.
I guess so. Yeah, I guess that's true. But I feel like that's usually when they're like one or two offers on the table as opposed to like 10 offers on the table.
No, totally. I mean, there's always these agents who just have bad advice for their clients. They don't hear what you're saying. They're like,
they don't hear.
That must not. No. Let's just do our thing. That's what, you know. And then you're like, well,
they're still telling people not like working. It's a buyer's market. Mm-hmm. Like, are they still, are people still prepping their clients like that?
I think so.
I mean,
and I think that there's, you know, there are a lot of people who are working with people from other markets, like lenders from other markets, you know? And so like, I was talking to a lender and I was telling him like, I need to know, you know how it is whenever you talk to someone from another state and you're trying to talk contingency, period.
They don't understand what you're
saying. They're like, you know, I mean, I can't really say that because, you know, it depends on how fast people get me the documents. And then I'm like, I need a loan contingency timeline. Like, I have to literally build it into this offer, you know? So, that answer is not working.
Gonna work.
I need a timeline. Like, what do you think you can do if they're expedient, you know?
Yep.
And, but anyway, he was like, well, you know, it's not like, you know, it's a market where you really have to, like, you know, like shorten things and you know whatever, so we should be good. And I'm like,
the lender telling you,
I'm like, it's
not LA,
that's not quite right. Like, it's definitely not the market where we can be like just dragging our ass, you know?
You know,
like,
what I usually do after I get those calls with those out of the state lenders, I call my client and say, okay, listen, if you want this house, I have really cool lenders that actually get it.
Right.
Yeah.
Are you married to this person or how do you feel? And then usually get the answer, no, mom, just no. I'm like, okay, call somebody else because this is a nightmare already.
Yep.
You know, totally.
And I hate to say it, but you got to be you have to know what you're doing in this market you're selling in. Out of state lenders shouldn't be helping buyers in a different state.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about this before too. It's like sometimes the lenders really overstep their boundaries and they start giving contractual advice or market advice to the clients. And I'm like, why are you telling them this? You know, I mean, I've had that several times where I had to call the lender and be like, stay in your lane.
I had a client who wanted to buy a house. She had $1 million in her Merrill Lynch account or whatever on the East Coast. She was about to write the offer. And then she calls me. She's like, my lender, like they said, it's not a good time to buy in California. And we're not writing at all on this. And it's just like, of course he said that because he doesn't want you to take your $1 million out of his account.
Right.
This is insane. And she listened to him.
Right.
Obviously she didn't write on a house.
Right.
I just thought, this is, wow, stay in your lane.
I know. So advice for you guys out there, okay? Know your real estate agent. Know if they know the market that you are trying to buy in. This is really important. So just because your mother's friend Bob has a brother with a license in Laguna Beach does not mean that he's the right agent for you in the Hollywood Hills. Yeah, like that is not somebody who probably really understands the market. They can't write you a competitive offer because they don't know the culture. But on top of all of that, make sure that you're not receiving advice from people who are not working in the sales of real estate on the ground 60 hours a week in the market that you're buying. Mm-hmm. Like these part-timers are people who are just kind of like one-offs here, da da da. It's like they don't even realize that they're ruining the deals for their clients, giving bad advice.
Mm-hmm. True.
You know? It's so, so important. So then when you are like, when I hear buyers go, we wrote 30 offers and we didn't get accepted, I'm thinking, I wonder what the quality of your offers was.
I was literally just thinking about this very nice set of buyers that I'm like, honestly, they're so nice. Like, I'm just shocked that they haven't gotten it because they also seem very like, they're ready, they know what they want. They've written 16 offers that have lost.
16?
Yeah, 16 offers. Wow. And you know, and you know, she acknowledged, I think it's just that my agent's not getting enough information for us. Like, right. I have to ask for the information for him to provide it. It's not like he's just going for it. And I'm like, damn, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
I know, it's interesting.
Crazy that you know that.
Yeah.
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 And they're still working with them.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you know, there is a difference between Coke and Pepsi. Sorry. Mm.
For sure. Which lane are you in?
I'm more of a Coke girl if I had to be one, for sure.
Coca-Cola, yeah.
Yeah. Same. It's just more refreshing.
Yeah, same. It is.
It is. And you know, whenever waitresses like don't have Coke, they're like, are you okay with Pepsi? It's like always like,
are you
like, and then you, is Pepsi all right? You know? It's like, sorry, Pepsi. All right, well, today we're going to talk about investing, and a lot of our clients and a lot of our listings are short-term rentals, fully furnished. They come with all the books. There are now DSCR loans and short-term rental loans available to people who want to jump into that market. But there are things that make some Airbnbs or short-term rentals more successful than others, shall we say. Mm-hmm. So we're excited to be joined by Marilyn Taylor, who is a short-term rental coach and consultant. She's going to share her tips on creating a successful real estate short-term rental business. And, you know, I'm sure she has a few horror stories she's learned along the way. So welcome, Marilyn. Thanks so much for coming to Under All's
Land. So happy to be here. Love, love, love being around a group of badass babes. Yes.
That's us.
So we're completely intrigued by your business. So can you please tell our audience what exactly it is you do?
Yes, I am an interior designer turned Airbnb coach, short-term rental coach. I also focus on interior design because that's really what made me successful to begin with in the business. So now my Instagram is, that's my jam. That's where all the fun happens. And I teach and I coach heart-centered hosting. Airbnb, short-term rentals, midterm rentals, all of that is a great investment. But I think what a lot of people getting into the business now, especially through COVID, you know, there was all this TikTok, you know, make $1 million. It's this amazing, like, get rich quick scheme. Forgetting completely that it's a hospitality business.
And let's talk
about people that. Involved.
There are people involved. Have you ever stayed at a shitty Airbnb?
I'm sure. I'm sure I have. Those ones don't live top of my mind.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I have. Have you?
I think I have, yeah.
Where things
I
mean, are broken.
I try hard to not.
Heat doesn't work. Yeah. There's no one to call. The numbers don't go through. Like,
or just isn't what they promised.
Or isn't what they promised. Right. Or it smells funny. Or like
you know,
nobody's checked on this place for
I
a while.
I tend to think of the ones I like most. Right. Those are the ones that live in my mind. But there was this one that was horrible when we were staying in the UK. It was like the lower level one, and it had no heat, and it was the middle of winter, and it was horrible.
Yeah. Oh, it unbearable. Just came to me. Yes, when you said UK, I stayed in one in Germany. It was the summer heat. It was under the roof, built out, but it was so pitched that I couldn't really stand up properly. You would like bang your head.
Oh,
it was so hot. We didn't know what to do. It was a mess. And the answer is like, well, it is hot here. We don't have air conditioning in Germany, which I knew, but like, do you have fans? Like, she wouldn't.
So they didn't try to.
No. And she lived in the same house. And then we got like, you know, our son made too much noise. And that was a problem too. I'm like, you know what? I hate this.
I have stayed in one that smelled like a dead mouse. Oh, you know what a dead mouse smells like?
No, but you do.
I do. It's a smell you know is wrong.
Yeah. Something's dead.
And it smells like it was an alive thing that's now dead.
Oh, yeah. God.
And you can't figure out where it's coming from, and it won't go away.
And here's the thing.
God.
Those things happen,
right? Yeah. I mean, and we're just going to dive in real early here. Okay, because I started in this business in 2005, before Airbnb even existed, right? It was a completely different business model back then because you actually spoke with every one of your guests. What you got to advertise on VRBO, but they were not taking payments. They were not coordinating anything for you. It was like, here's their number, their name, and their email address. Go for it. Get the booking, wow. Right? So you had to talk to them, and I talked to every single one of them on the phone. And that's how you gain trust with each other. They needed to trust you, you needed to trust them. And there was this understanding that it was a mutual trust that needed to happen, and you were vetting each other.
Wow, I love that.
Right, and I feel like when Airbnb came along, and I'm an Airbnb ambassador, so I'm gonna say some true things about Airbnb today that are not all lovely. But that's because it's important that when people want to use a platform that they understand what it is and what it isn't and where their responsibility lies. Because Airbnb is getting a bad rap because there's all these investors flooding going, ooh, this is the way to make the highest cash on cash return. And, you know, but they're completely forgetting that they're literally buying a hospitality business with guests involved. And if you don't have your heart in that and you don't care about providing a quality experience, because that's what you're providing. Mm-hmm. You're not just providing a place to stay. Mm-hmm. You're providing an experience. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's somewhere for someone to live for an extended period of time, maybe two, 3 months. Mm-hmm. When you understand that and you go into it with that frame of mind and caring deeply about the guest as your product, then you'll succeed. Mm-hmm. Then you're gonna have longevity in the business. But like there's a, okay, so this is where I was gonna dive in. So over the years, there started to be a pattern across my rentals. It was the annual poutastrophe, right?
The poutastrophe.
The annual poutastrophe. Okay, so at my Cape Cod house, it was that, you know, it was an underground, like a walkout basement. So it had an ejector pump and its septic tanks on Cape Cod, right? We don't have like
public
city
sewer.
Right? Mm-hmm. So the ejector pump has to like, you flush the toilet and it shoots it all up and out into the septic. Well, people loved, no matter how cute the sign was saying, please do not put anything in this toilet other than septic safe toilet paper, literally nothing else. People just
tampons, threw
things in. All the things, baby wipes, all the things. And then it like gets caught, breaks the ejector pump, all of what was
going up is coming back down.
Right back into the house.
Wow.
So now we have a hazmat cleanup.
A poop explosion.
Yes. You know, and I want my money back. And I'm like, well, I want my money back.
Right.
You know? That just cost me $1,100. You know what I mean? And so that was happening like consistently. Like got a brand new ejector pump thinking maybe my ejector pump is a problem. No.
Just a public service announcement. Guys, septic tanks, they are different than sewer lines.
Yeah.
And they cannot receive flushable wipes or anything. Tampons,
right.
Flushable wipes, baby wipes.
And an ejector pump, when it's like a pump that has to like, the things have to go whoosh, they get stuck. And it like breaks
the sewer lines. We see
it
all the time.
Yeah.
So, just don't flush that
stuff.
It's
and there's
not
like
science.
A flap at the top that lets the gases out. So another year, like the flap got stuck open and gases were allowed into the house. And so now it smells like shit.
Okay.
In the house, literally, right? So here's what I'm saying, right? And there was an earthquake like a few years ago and I had tiny homes in the desert. They were mobile homes. And little did I know, I'm not there, but little did I know. And meanwhile, I had a long-term guest in there living there for like a month and a half. When it happened, I was made aware that the sewer line like popped out of the thing and sewer was like going, right? So we cleaned that up, they reconnected it out there. What I did not know was that it had disconnected from the toilet.
Oh, yeah.
And so
everything
all
after
sewage
that.
Was just dumping under
the house.
My house.
Oh, my God.
Now I have a rat problem.
Oh,
because rats
God.
Are gross.
Man.
Okay? And
that's
so then the next guest comes in, and meanwhile the cleaner had cleaned, and nobody telling me anything. Nobody tells me it smells like crap. Ooh. And so the next guest checks in and she's like, Marilyn, you're amazing. I can, but your house smells like shit. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what? And I call my cleaner and I'm like, did you smell anything? And she's like, yeah, I smelled something funny, but I just figured, you know, maybe the last person. I was like, but she left like 3 days ago.
Oh my God.
Like, what? Right?
So and now you have that in contract with the maids. Well, like, tell us if it smells like poo.
So my whole point is, it's all about how your host responds, right? So I immediately, fortunately, had another spot open. I moved her out. I replaced her into another equal property, took care of her, refunded her, like did everything I could to take care of her. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what it comes down to, because stuff happens. Mm-hmm. These are homes, and mm-hmm. you guys know better than anyone. Homes are not always going to be perfect. Mm-hmm. Things happen. We have team members that we depend on. So just because you have a problem happens, it doesn't mean that it's a shitty Airbnb. It's your host. How do they respond?
Mm. Well, that brings up a really good point, so because I don't know about you, but in the era of social media, a lot of times people are suspended from saying the truth because they are afraid of bad comments or reviews or going viral for the wrong thing. With Airbnb, the reviews really do make an impact. Yeah. Like, do you ever feel like you've been held hostage by a review?
100%. And that goes both ways. You know, there are very savvy guests out there. And so this is where my platform, what I really, really coach so much on is built-in protections as a host. So like now speaking to investors in this industry, so many people put all their eggs in the Airbnb basket that they're gonna protect them. Well, the reality is there's so much liability that goes with being a host and allowing people to sleep in your space. Then on top of that, you have savvy guests who know how to game the system and know how to, and so in every Airbnb I've ever stayed in, have any of you guys ever had to sign a rental contract?
No.
Okay, neither have I. I have never not allowed, not even my aunt, to stay in my rental without signing a rental contract. And this it protects both ways. So when I first started on Airbnb, I got kicked off because this is what we did. We took a security deposit and I was taking security deposits and their terms of service didn't say I couldn't, so I did. And then someone complained, well it's in the frequently asked questions. Well, those aren't legal terms of service, so I kept doing it and they kicked me off. All of my bookings got canceled, but they all had a rental contract with me. So I was legally bound, they were legally bound. And so I just called them up, said, you have, everything's in place, we're good. And we just exchanged money.
Took it back to the old school.
And everything was fine, right? So, but Airbnb is, it's risky both ways. So my platform, what I teach is how to build in protections, layered protections, how to vet guests, how to attract the right guests, how to repel the wrong guests. Because I am a more strict host. There's a little bit more upfront in booking my place, but my places are special. You're gonna, like, I cater deeply to my guests. And so I want guests that respect that.
You want quality people.
Yeah.
So do quality product.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I had so many questions just come up. I was like crazy. I'll start with this. So how much liability insurance or how much insurance and what are your insurance providers for the best short-term insurance for a landlord?
Okay, so hands down right now, Proper Insurance is the number one top insurer.
Proper Insurance.
I'll give you a link, okay? And that link, you get a free quote with them. They are going to be more expensive than a typical retail insurer that might have a short-term rental addendum in there, that allows you to do short-term rental, but it doesn't necessarily add coverage. And there's a lot of differences between what Proper does and versus the others. And I literally don't know of another company that caters specifically to short-term rentals. It is worth every penny because the extra coverages you're going to get are going to be worth it. The other thing that I recommend to people is a damage protection policy for every single booking. Now, this is a small fee. It might be somewhere between $24 to maybe, $64. per booking, but it'll give you between $2,000 to $10,000. Some companies give you up to $20,000 extra coverage, as well as $1 million in liability. Mm. So now your homeowner's insurance that you're getting through Popper, that's going to have liability coverage, usually $1 million or above. You can always increase
that's
that
just
coverage.
Liability. That's not liability. Damage to the property.
Right.
That's what
but
you're
then
saying.
They're also covering your damage, you know, but your deductible is usually
couple like, grand or something.
Yeah, maybe $1,000, something right. like that. Right, right. But the damage protection policies, those are like anything above $50 usually. Mm. Now, there's a bunch of companies that do these, but the only one, there's actually two that will also cover intentional damage. So what a lot of hosts don't know is they use these policies, but they're really written for the guest, and it's only accidental damage. Mm-hmm. Okay? But they're designed to say no. So So the right companies, there's two. There's Wavo, and there, which is a sister company of Proper, mm-hmm. but they're brand new. So their process is very manual right now, but still amazing. So for people with more properties, that's not going to be feasible. The company I am like hands down in love with right now is called Safely, mm-hmm. because not only do they give you this damage protection policy, but they also will vet the guest. There's a guest screening element. They take the guest ID. Now, I've always requested a photo ID, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because I want to see that you match the person on
the booking.
Yes.
Of course.
Right? Because I don't take third-party bookings. I want to know that I'm communicating with the person staying in my house. Because mm-hmm. mm-hmm. if something comes up, there's going to be a power outage, whatever, I need to know that they're going to know, because I want them to have a successful stay. Mm-hmm. If I can't communicate these things and something goes wrong and they have to get a hold of their mom first, and then, you know, like parents booking for their 16-year-olds.
Right.
So my rental contract nips that in the bud, right? So when people see this rental contract, they're like, oh, right? And they may not want to sign. So people are like, I'm not comfortable signing. I'm like, bye.
Right.
Right? Like,
red
that
flag,
is okay.
You hold it down.
Red
Next,
flag.
Because mm-hmm. someone else will come in that will appreciate these mm-hmm. the structure and the boundaries. Right. Mm-hmm. So they screen your guests, but what's amazing is they have this database of guests who have had claims filed against them before, who have caused damage, or who are sex offenders, or whatever, right? So because people are bringing sex offenders into their homes not knowing, having no idea, right? It's amazing to me how many hosts don't even ask one question about you. They don't want to know anything about you.
Right.
That blows my mind. And I think maybe because I have a real estate license, I've studied investing, I have had the fear of God put into me of how much liability I am taking on allowing someone to sleep in my home.
How about pools?
Oh my gosh. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
Pools, hot tubs, any of that. So.
Well, I'm scared.
Right? Yeah. Hey, but don't be.
Oh my what God. About these scams, though? Weren't you scammed once out of money?
That oh my God,
it was
we
a fake
scammed.
Booking.
Dominique and I were scammed.
And
so
you
like
they took the money and she
yeah,
never got it back?
Yeah, they took the money. We did get it back.
Oh, you
but
did.
We had to fight for it. And then
social media, that was where it did come in handy.
Yep, yep.
It was like VRBO. We booked through VRBO. Horrible. Honestly, horrible customer service. They had someone who was taking active listings, like they were for sale, taking the pictures of these listings, putting them on VRBO, changing the address by one number, you know? So it's like you show up and there is a house that looks like the house that you booked, but you didn't book that house. You booked just a fake house, but they've already taken your payment, all of that.
And then they cancel on you.
And then they cancel on you, but they'd pretend that you had something to do with the canceling. So, you know, we instantly reported it, of course. And this is the crazy part. We had booked a house with them, then saw another one that was like better than that house. And we were like, can we, you know, like, is this house available? Can we switch over? And they use that as an opportunity to cancel the other one, but then say this other one's not available, right? Or did they take
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it was a whole thing. It ended up being about $12,000 worth of fake canceling. Apparently it happens a lot in certain tourist markets, especially with international guests. And you get a lot of Disney visitors, a lot of people from out of the country. They don't know, like, there's no vetting system. Okay, I'm a huge fan of Instagram verification. Let me just say, I don't give a funk if it's $15 a month or whatever. At least we know the human being, the ID, and the account check out, right? Yeah. Yeah. So I feel like that we should have that for emails. And I feel like we should, as consumers, not only should the landlord be able to check us, we should be able to check you. And Amen. So what we rely on right now is these the super hosts or whatever.
Right, the reviews, the super hosts.
Right, but I don't even know what that really means. Yeah. And also, I know that there are some super hosts that are simply managers for multiple properties. Yeah. And they have established maybe a great track record because of these three, but there are seven others that have hired them too. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily guarantee you a great stay.
So there are vetting processes. And there are vetting processes both when you're a guest and a host, right? And there, I've never had a bad experience on Airbnb because I vet my hosts the same way I vet my guests.
How?
See? So be... Okay.
And VRBO, we are never going to use again.
Yeah, never again.
So
again.
No process.
Ever. See, and... But,
no process.
But VRBO, now... That was one bad experience on VRBO, but there's a ton of great.
It was multiple. We saw how the system worked.
No, and whenever we reached out about it with blatant evidence that it was a total scam.
Airbnb is the same, though.
They did not honor it. They didn't honor it. It actually took us going on a social media campaign against them for them to take it seriously enough.
To go, we had to. They lost a customer.
Yeah. Oh, many.
But I hear horror stories like that, too. About
Airbnb,
about, and you know, and I hear it from hosts. I see it from hosts and guests. So being so vocal, right? TikTok especially, the guests are the ones that are like, Airbnb, right? But in my forums, you hear the horror stories from hosts, and then being an Airbnb ambassador, right? I help people list their properties on Airbnb, and you know the amount of horrible listings I see go up where I'm just like,
like bad real estate photos.
Oh my gosh, you know, and they don't know. But as far as verifying properties, I do know that Airbnb is really stepping it up now, where they're requiring a utility bill, they are requiring verification that you actually have the right to post that property. And I think that's a newer thing. And I only know this because my ambassador students are saying, you know, they were telling me I hadn't uploaded my utility bill yet. And that's why they froze my thing, you know. So that is starting to happen more in Airbnb. And that is one thing I have to say with having been at headquarters at Airbnb. Like I'm in this smaller kind of elite group where they bring us in and they pick our brains and they want the feedback and we brainstorm and... And the people at headquarters care deeply. The heart of Airbnb is it started with Brian Chesky. You know, it was air mattress, like, or air bed and breakfast, right? It was air mattresses that he literally started with putting an air mattress in his living room in San Francisco, him and his roommates, and they would like
rented it out
for people to sleep on the air mattress, and they'd give them breakfast in the morning. So,
I remember when it started.
That's really dodgy,
right? But that's how it started. It was a space sharing platform, and it was about community and people.
Like, you needed somewhere to sleep, you could go to this person's house, and they would feed you and give. I remember when it started, that was the idea.
And that was like, cool.
Cool. And then it turned into this whole thing.
And so they're trying to kind of move back to that. And that is my platform, too, is that moving it back to a place of connecting people with people and just giving them a wonderful place to stay, a wonderful experience, matching the guest. If the guest... let's say you live on property, if the guest wants their privacy, like, there are signs you can tell if they like answer real quick and they're not, you know, they're not super chatty, like, give them their space. But if they love chatting, like, pop open that bottle of wine, like, let's sit down and chat and get to know each other, right? That's what hospitality is. It's just like anything else in sales, right? When you meet a new prospective client and they're real chatty, you get real chatty back.
Right. It's like matching the
energy. It's a full service business, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's the same thing as a host. And that's why I design my rentals in a very specific way. I go so above and beyond. And I'm really into vintage, using a lot of repurposing furniture, vintage furniture, original art, you know, just pieces that create interest and that make it feel unique and homey.
Give it a soul.
Yeah. Because people feel like they're in my home, not that they're in a hotel room.
Right.
You know?
And I mean, I will say difference. There are plus and minuses to that. One time I rented this place in Pioneer. No, it wasn't Pioneer Town. It was in Big Bear. And it was a designer who, like, made a name for this, like, rental online. Like, she was in the LA Times, And the stove, I could not get that old-timey stove to light. I was just, like, really annoyed by that. I think that it depends what kind of experience you're looking for.
Yeah.
But I do agree that there are some places that immediately you walk in and you kind of feel like you can sink in.
Yes.
Like, if your kid bumps into something, it's not going to, like, be the end of the world,
right.
You know? And I do love that experience, too. I have another question for you. It comes up a lot whenever my clients are considering buying an Airbnb.
Mm-hmm.
How does it work with transferring bookings and or like super host status? That's a big thing, isn't it?
Okay, so this is one of those things where Airbnb will not transfer an Airbnb account to another person. So in other words, like reviews and that property, it lives on the account where it started, period, amen. VRBO will.
Mm-hmm.
They will swap over, and I've done it before. But I think I'm so mixed on that because I feel like not all owners, not all hosts are equal. And when you do that, you're giving the impression, so all those earlier mm-hmm. reviews, they're not just about the house or the property.
People.
It's really
right.
about the host.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because the host is probably 70% of the experience.
Right.
And,
but
you
if you have like, but if you have 20 bookings and you sell the place, you have to. My understanding is they won't transfer the bookings.
Okay,
you have
so
to
now
cancel them, and then.
So I have a big problem with that.
Yeah.
I do not think that's okay.
Yeah.
And it's unbelievable to me how many property managers or owners think it's okay to just cancel a bunch of people. Sorry, I sold it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You have an obligation to them.
Right.
You made a
exactly.
commitment to them. They have planned their whole vacation or whatever around.
Plus, talking about
the
new
there.
Buyer who might want to get keep these reservations going
yeah,
to make the income.
That's
immediately.
What it is
okay,
for
so
me.
Now
that's
maybe
the
they
point.
And maybe they do. So
yeah.
then you have to create an agreement between buyer and seller for that transition period.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
So that maybe you make them a co-host. Where they can manage those bookings, but it still is on the account.
Oh,
and now Airbnb has just set up where you can actually create split payouts so that the money will go to the prospective people in their correct amounts without
oh,
anyone
wow.
having to do any.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah,
that's
cool.
That is smart.
Great idea.
That
yeah,
really is.
I mean, that's
yeah.
good that they
so
do that.
So you can transition it. So the guest never knows different. They are never.
Affected.
Now,
right.
when I was selling my rentals, I knew I would try to sell them in not in high season, right? I would try to sell them in a time period where that transition would be easier.
Right.
And I would let the, you know, the people buying the property. Now, you also make your pool of buyers smaller when you're trying to sell a business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what made it really hard for me to sell my Cape Cod house. But you, if you wanted to open it up to both, and people want to buy the house, but they don't want to keep it as a rental. They just want it for themselves. Well, then you say, okay, but so then the house is not going to be available until next day. But the minute you know you're selling that house or you're starting
yeah.
to think, I want to sell that house, you like Stop. Drop that booking window down to maybe 2-3 months,
yeah.
right? Because I think of how long escrow might be, right?
Mm.
You know, from the time period of when I'm going to ramp it up, get the house ready to put on, up for marketing, put it on the market, and then you find buyers, and then you go through
mm-hmm.
the whole escrow period. You're usually about 90 days.
Right.
So I just would never allow it to be more than 90 days out. And once I have a buyer in place, then I would like pull that booking window in so that hopefully there's no bookings much beyond where they're at. And then you can also give the guest the option of, you know, here's what's going on. We're selling. You know, we feel obligated. We want to take care of you and make sure that you have your booking. But, you know, we also, maybe they have other properties. We can move you to this property or whatever. But if it's someone with just a single property, honor the guest.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. seems like the
Don't
right
do
thing
that to
do.
Don't do that to them. Mm. It's just not
but
cool.
Yeah. Also, I have to say, this just spurred a thought. We should have an Acme you know, like Airbnb transfer document mm-hmm. or instruction. Yes. You know what I mean? Yes. Like, cause that,
yeah.
I love that. I love the idea of like, you know, the agreement to have them added as a co-host and like mm-hmm. yeah. retain those bookings. And you know yeah. what I mean? Well, like, that's very cool.
Yeah. And then the owner keeps like 30%, right? That's their commission for having found and landed the booking, right? And then the new owner comes into some income, which is amazing, and it's a selling point.
Yep.
You know, but they may not know what they're doing yet. So, you know, the original owner can be there to help support and walk them through that process, you know.
I love that.
Yeah.
In your coaching, do you coach people on how to navigate changing rules and regulations in the different yes. markets?
See, and that's what I think really makes me different as a coach, is the fact that I have been through so many iterations of this business since 2005. I'm in year 18. Like wow. May is year 18. And I mean, I have had to adapt in so many different ways. My rental contract, I sell rental contract templates that I started out pulling them from the internet and then having an attorney look over it. And over the years, I've added and added and added. With every new fantastic. Thing that happened, I've added a new clause. And now we've got an internet clause that protects you from anyone doing anything illegal on your IP address.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Oh, my God. Like downloading stuff. Yeah. Right? I didn't even think about that.
Right?
Like yes.
Illegal gaming or porn or whatever. Yeah. Or, you know, I mean, there's stories of people like having a prostitution ring or what? Human sex trafficking yeah. in their rental. Yeah. So, I mean, there's so many things. So over these, I tell you, you will never find a more robust template than this one that I sell. Mm. And it'll cost you $1,500 to go to an attorney and have one made. Up, yeah. But if they're not a short-term rental host,
they don't know what they're doing either. Yeah.
They're not going to put everything in there. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, people get, they're like, no, okay, you weren't kidding. This thing is robust. It covers everything. And I keep learning, being in these forums, being an ambassador, being a teacher, the stories I hear, ooh, we need to add this to this. Mm-hmm. So I just keep adding it. And so the people that buy my contract, like every time I add something, they get the new version. They always get the newer, updated version. So
what about those like longer term rentals? Like, isn't it when you're like 30 days or longer, now you have tenant rights?
Okay, so
how's...
Good point. I'm so glad you brought this up, because another reason why I focus so much on protections, my policy is that I won't rent for more than 28 days. Now, if you want to stay for 3 months, you're going to have three 28-day bookings with three separate contracts. And the contract is so clear that the address that you put at the top of this rental contract is your primary property. This is for hospitality only. This is not a residential agreement. I just build all that in there. I forego any tenant-landlord rights. That is not what this is. You know, mm-hmm. so there is a gray area. The minute you go 30 days plus,
that's LA. That's
in
LA
California,
city requirement.
The minute you go 30 days plus, you're now in a gray area.
Yep.
Okay. But so, which is why I don't go in California over 28 days. There are a lot of other places that kind of align with that, but it's really anything between that and up to 6 months. You could fight and show, no, this was a short stay. This was a hospitality. They said this was their primary property, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I still, mid-stay, so now it's called midterm rentals, anything 30 days plus. Now, when you go 30 days plus, the benefit of that is you don't have to have a permit for short-term rentals. So a lot of people, do you in LA still even 30 plus?
He has to be 30 plus if the property falls under rent control, and the city just passed an ordinance making even single family homes fall under RSO.
Okay. So it's so important to know your, like, that city's rules. Yeah,
right.
And it's amazing to me how many people will come in through the ambassador program, like a guy in Riverside that was like, oh, I'm ready to go, you know, and I didn't answer him within 30 seconds, and he was like, hello. Oh. And I was like, sorry.
Hello.
Literally doing a video for another, like, I do these video listing audits. So I was doing that. I couldn't answer him right away. So I get back to him, and I was like, hi, I'm so glad you're doing this. I see you're in Riverside. Have you looked into the ordinances so that you understand what you need to do to get a permit? And have you applied yet? Dead silent. Hasn't even responded since. And I think there's so many people that get into this don't even know that that's the first step you take before you go buying or rental arbitraging or getting into a property. You need to know, can you even do this?
Right.
So, but there's, it's, I was very against midterm stays or long-term stays until now there are ways to do it that are effective. And there's, you could rent to insurance companies. Those are solid bookings, right? Because it's displaced people who their whole house flooded or whatever, and they have to live somewhere for a couple of months. Insurance companies place them in your home for a couple of months. They pay really well. And then the family moves out, and you know, that's a good solid midterm booking, right? They're 60, 90 days sometimes. Like nurses, corporate stays, you know? There's even government housing that you can get into. So there's a lot of alternative like structures and strategies to do it. But you just have to be so careful, because I've been a landlord. That's where I started, right? And I got into this because I come from a background of two parents. Like, we never wanted for anything. We weren't rich, but we were comfortable. But they never had anything to show for it. No retirement. No savings, no investments, like nothing, right? So they were like, they had to work, work, work. My dad literally worked himself to death. Literally worked himself to death. You know, with not a dime to show at the end of the day. And so that motivated me to get into real estate investing, but I started as a landlord, right? As most people do. And I bought in Vegas, and that market crashed, right?
I remember that.
Right?
It was a big crash.
That market, it was a big crash, and there was so much inventory and not enough renters. And so then my rent, I had great renters, and they went on to buy their own home. And then my house, I could not find another renter to save my life. I had to short sell the house.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, with after that experience, I was just like... And the profit just wasn't there. And by then, I had used the equity in that house.
Right.
Thank God. Before, like, I used the equity and bought a house in Cape Cod. And that was my first short-term rental. And when I saw that potential and what I was able to make on that house and not have to be a landlord and not be under those rules, I was like, okay, I don't like this.
What are the best states for short-term rentals right now?
That is a loaded question, because I don't think that actually could be answered.
Really?
No. It's which markets.
Right.
Because
markets are so micro.
I am actually invested in Michigan.
Okay.
There are, so I think the best place to look is, it's so like oversaturated in a lot of markets. And oversaturation is a problem for people who don't know what they're doing and who aren't going to be like me, right? In how they present.
Or the people you coach.
Or my students, right? You'll still perform well, but there are other markets where you can go in there and you're competing against Grandma's Cottage.
Right.
Right? Where people don't know what they're doing, and you will always be the go-to property. So the more rural, you want to look for gaps in markets. And right now, Michigan lake houses are kind of a hot thing, but they're figuring this out, and so they're also starting to clamp down a little bit with regulations. So it's important to me, these are the things you want to look for. You want regulations in place so that you already know they've thought about it,
right?
And these are the regulations in place. They can change later, but at least it's better than no regulations, because usually no regulations, the knee-jerk response is just to clamp down and stop it altogether, right? And now you've invested in something where suddenly your model doesn't work anymore.
Right.
So I've invested into a Michigan market as a passive investor near a lake. And so I have quite a few connections there with people that are doing very, very well there. So, like, I just identified in North Carolina, I'm going to visit family, and I was looking for a short-term rental and could not find, there was just nothing.
No inventory.
And there was no inventory.
Were you trying to buy it furnished already?
No, this was just to stay as a guest. Oh. And there was nothing. And I'm like, this looks like a gap in the market.
Right. I love that too. Yeah. Right? I love the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? I'm like, you know, I'm obsessed with the idea of having some short-term rentals. So mm-hmm. I've looked into so many markets. Mm-hmm. Detroit, Charlotte, you know.
Kentucky.
Atlanta until they kibosh.
Yeah.
Out of state.
Yeah.
You have to apparently own a primary residence in Atlanta in order to be able to run an Airbnb.
Interesting.
Yeah. Crazy. Okay. And you can only have one.
Feels un-American.
Maybe two.
Feels un-American. Yes.
So there are people who had like 14 Airbnbs who now have had to shut down the majority of them in Atlanta. So it's good it's the good point to, you know, a good point to like what you were saying about, you know, people needing to do research on what the regulations are for the local market, whether there are any, or whether they're talking about it.
Yes.
Because for a long time they were talking about it in Atlanta, but it just went into action this year. But they've been talking about it for like 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway,
you've got to do your research.
Yeah, because there are some beautiful opportunities in downtown Atlanta.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you, I was like,
Nashville. I mean, you know, there's still some good opportunities there, but it's so. I just stayed in Nashville. Super cute place, right? Really, like they got me with the aesthetics. Really, really cute. But then I get there, and it's like bare bones. And then I realize, it's the cheapest. Like I felt like I was in a. I don't know, like a
Red
college dorm or something.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah.
Like it was the cheapest, rickety-est bed. There
Living
were no
spaces.
Knives. There was, you couldn't actually cook. Like there was a full kitchen, right? But you couldn't actually cook a meal because there was
no utensils, like two pots and pans.
It was not stocked. The host, when I let her know, hey, there's no knives, I couldn't even cut my lemon in the morning. Like, you know, and she brings me this like single serrated knife. And I'm like, thank you. You know, like you couldn't actually chop anything. Like it was just bizarre thing. But I heard that's Nashville. They don't have to. They're killing it. They are killing it. Mm. And they don't care because they don't have
Interesting.
To. Right. So to me, I see a market like that and I'm like, see, I still see opportunity there because I could come in with all my badassery and give guests a five-star experience in every way, shape, and form. And then that, now I can charge even more than everybody else.
Yep.
And then the reviews, people are like, oh, I want this place. Because not only is it cute, but it has everything I need. I have all my amenities. I'm so comfortable here. I don't need to go to the store and even buy my tampons because my tampons are right there.
Love that.
You know, like, right?
I have a question
in
regards to that. Like, let's talk furnishing.
Yeah.
Because there are remote places that might not have cool furniture stores anywhere near. How do you get the cute stuff into your remote place that you've maybe not ever seen? Like, are there people that help specialize, set it up for you? Because if you don't do it yourself, you know it's not done how you want it to be done.
Right.
So how does all that work?
Okay, so there's two different approaches to furnishing your rental. The majority of us, in my colleagues, we're using Minoan and HostGPO.
Minoan.
M-I-N-O-A-N. And HostGPO. I will give you links to these as well.
Okay.
Because it'll get anyone who uses these links to sign up will get a discount or $25 toward their first purchase, whatever. Okay. But they are purchasing groups that give discounts. So I am already an interior designer. So I already have like 40% off. And 20% off, 30% off. And we're talking Pottery Barn, Crate and Barrel.
Yep.
That's the stuff you need to put in.
Yes.
Otherwise,
Joybird, you know, quality, good furniture.
Right.
Okay. And it's not just furnishings, it's small businesses with candles and amenities and linens and
Tchotchkes
mattresses
and
soaps
art
and towels, all
these things, right? Okay. But at unbelievable discounts. The cool thing about Minoan, so Minoan versus HostGPO, Minoan is free to sign up for. You know, HostGPO, I think it's $150 a year or something like that. But they each have, and they're both worth doing, 100%. They each have their own, some proprietary brands that the other one does not have.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So like my favorite locks are through HostGPO for 40% off Igloo Home Locks. Like. Mm. Hands down, best locks in the market, and almost no one knows about them, and I don't know why. I don't understand.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
So, but how do you get your furniture into the house?
So they ship it. everything's shipped.
So you order it on that website, they bring it.
So Minoan, you literally can buy everything from all the different places, and it's placed through Minoan. Now you've got Minoan managing all that for you, so you see all your purchases in one place.
Oh my God, I love that. Awesome. And then they bring it into your house and build the furniture?
So you can actually hire people to do that for
you. Oh, they just drop in front of the door?
They will.
When it gets delivered?
Yeah, okay. Or you can also, now I think Wayfair, and there are also groups that have warehouses that will gather all the things for you so that then on install day, everything goes in.
So it's all at the same time. Yeah. Everything will be delivered at the same time.
Or you could just have it delivered into your garage or whatever. It's
having somebody local there.
That's what I was going to say.
Things, mm-hmm. Or you fly there.
Right. But then you would have to maybe be there for a month because all the stuff comes in different times. I'm really like logistically how.
So if you're wanting
you
to.
Give everybody the lockbox code, just go in there. It's the first bedroom to the left. That's where the bed
you're
goes.
You're either going to have to go stay there.
Okay.
Or you're going to have a team. Somebody.
So there is some.
Stager.
Got it.
In Orlando, I hired a staging company and I called and I asked them. I'm like, can you actually just buy everything like it's staging and tell them, give me the price, the inventory list, and da da da. And they did that so that the day after I closed, I could move in and we have beds and sheets and knives and plates and everything.
Yeah, that's amazing.
They didn't wash anything though, so I had to wash everything again. But they're stagers.
Yeah.
But still, I was like, this is a good service.
That's really smart.
It'd be great if they washed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, so you could do a service like that, or you can hire, you know, the team that's going to be helping you anyway. I mean, there's always TaskRabbit. And,
yeah, I was going to say, there are apps for that.
But if you're going to be managing remotely, you're going to want an on-the-ground local manager anyway that can then help manage all of this before it launches.
That's a great point. There are local vacation property management companies, and there are national ones. You recommend the local ones?
100%.
Okay.
I have, yes.
Like the Mikasa, toss it.
Do not.
Okay.
Do all not.
Right, so there it is, local.
One thing I'll say too is that I just had a client who bought an income property in Ohio that I think is gonna be a short-term rental. I don't know if it's a short-term rental or not, but he said that after he closed on it, he found out that management companies out there charge out-of-state investors more because they feel like they can, And so he hadn't budgeted for that. Yeah. You know, and that was something that caught him off guard.
That's the thing.
So get the price.
Here's the thing. If you're investing in a market that is not where you live, you need to be researching all of this before.
You write your offer on the house?
Yes.
Yeah.
You need to identify who your manager is going to be, or your co-host, or your local manager, or your handy. Like, you
this is all good stuff, because some people don't know. They like jump in and find this really cool house, let's go. And then you go backwards. And then you're like, oh, and now it's too late. Yeah. And you don't know what you don't know. You don't have to, like, you know, what are all the things I need to think about?
Exactly.
The handyman, the plumber, who gets up at 3 a.m. when the pipe bursts.
The whole team.
Yeah.
It really takes a team. And that's, again, why I'm saying you aren't just buying an investment property. You're buying a hospitality business.
Yeah.
Love that.
Right? Yeah.
Let's move just into what it is you offer with your coaching. And how people can find you. We could probably talk about this for hours.
I know.
Our time is almost
all
up.
Day.
So let's go.
Yeah.
Tell us everything.
Okay. So first place to find me is Instagram.
Okay.
Right? And if you want to connect with me, if you want to ask questions or you want to know more, just DM me. I love when people connect with me in DMs.
What's your handle?
It's at Marilyn Taylor. It's just my name. Marilyn with two N's.
Cool.
And so that's the first place. And then on my Instagram is my link, and then you're going to see all the things I have to offer. My rental contract templates, and, you know, I have a little mini course. And
what's in the mini course?
The mini course is an overview of my approach. It's going to talk about being a heart-centered host. I have a module that is the 4 love languages of hosting.
Love that.
You know, knowing your strengths, and but learning how to be strong in all 4, because you have to do them all. And protections. Design. I have a design module in there, but it's all very, you know, you can get through it in a week. It's perfect for someone thinking about hosting and who wants to approach in the same way that I approach, but it's not going to give you the soup to nuts. So I am actually literally just launching a coaching program next week that is soup to nuts, where it'll be
soup to nuts one.
It's a group coaching where I'm going to take you through, I'm going to get you where you need to go, whether it's in your existing business or your new business that you want to have in the future, mm-hmm. I'll get you there.
How many rental properties do you own? Are they all over the country?
So I had six at one point, and I wiped the slate clean because I wanted more profit for the same effort, and I knew that I could invest in better markets. So I wanted to get work smarter, not harder. And so now I have one in Central California, and then I have the one that I've invested in
Michigan.
In Michigan, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm always keeping my eyes.
You're like
open
part owner in Michigan,
one. Yeah. And I'm 50, so yeah. it's now it's like time to start moving into a more passive model for me. Plus, I love coaching, right? So mm-hmm. I'm not looking to build this empire of rental properties, and that's what I love about my approach is that if you just want to start, this is the beauty of Airbnb too. If you want to start just with finding somewhere in your own home that you can rent out, whether it's converting a garage, a room that you can either add its own entrance or you know that has its own entrance, you can start there and start building your way into having enough to then either rental arbitrage, or maybe your next step is finding that property or a mobile home in a resort somewhere that is attainable, right? Anyone can do this. This is not just for people with hundreds of thousands sitting in the bank ready to go, you know, really. And sometimes it just is helping you pay your rent. That's right. How Brian Chesky started. He just needed to help pay his rent, right?
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
It was a pleasure.
Underall is the Land. We're going to post the Instagram handle, Marilyn with two N's, Taylor,
yes.
And her website, so you can sign up for these courses. I get these questions all the time. It's such valuable information. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
We'll see you guys next time on Underall is the Land.
Bye. 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 Bye.